Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me to end up the week here on a Friday. As typical, we've got great guests this week. It was really nice to get a couple guys on and really have a solid conversation with them. It was also real nice to be able to get my man George back on the line with us here to end the week. So, George, thanks for coming by, man.
No problem. Glad to be here. I'm also glad that I can see the end of the tunnel now. Football's almost back.
Almost. It's getting close there. Just threw in my credential requests for training camp. Excited to kind of see how everything goes through with that process. I mean, it's just a new spot, new people, just ultimately a whole new, I think, experience for, you know, media. But I think the issue with the two fan days kind of is rubbing me the wrong way. Does that make sense to you? I mean, from what they go from Anderson University and then they go into twice for the entire camp actually having fans be able to come in and enjoy that, that to me seems a little strange. Offer any insight to that? I mean, as far as what maybe a reasoning was or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, it's logistics, and it's tough because I understand the fan situation completely. I mean, you're looking at a team that since, like, 1984, every training camp practice has been open. You know, that's 33 years worth of training camp practices, and now there's two, you know?
Right.
So, but it has to do with, you know, as long as they're going to be at the complex, there's really just not room there for parking. There's just no way, really, to open it up to the fan base at large. And then the logistics of moving to somewhere else, you know, for those one-day practices, there's so much involved with that to get those things together that I think ultimately, too, is what they're going to be able to manage. And, you know, it is. It's disappointing and it's sad. And I wonder, honestly, how long-term this whole plan is, because I know Jim Irsay has made a point of saying, you know, we're doing this year, but they really haven't committed to anything past that. So I don't know. Maybe they'll be somewhere where there's more open practices down the line, or maybe this is a way of the future.
Do you see that as something that they'll be doing? Like, do you actually see them maybe going back to Anderson, or do you think that if they were to go somewhere in the future, that it would be, you know, there would be a different landing spot for them in the future?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they came back to Anderson. I think that, you know, at least for the next few years, I think that's probably off the table. You never say never. It's happened before where they left and came back to Anderson. So, but I don't think, you know, if they go back to campus somewhere next year, I'd be surprised if Anderson is the place. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if they found someplace, maybe even within Indianapolis. You know, maybe I'm just throwing stuff out there. I don't know anything as far as any deals or discussions or anything else, but it wouldn't shock me if a place like Marion University or maybe even, you know, the University of Indianapolis could host even a week or two, you know, even if it's not a full quote unquote training camp schedule, at least host a week or two and get out there. I do think it's important to Jim Irsay. I think he enjoys being able to put the team out there and let fans get, you know, close to the product. I think that this year it was just a matter of once they had determined that they weren't going to go back to Anderson, you know, some dominoes fell into place and decided to go home. And once that happened, their hands were kind of tied a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I would like, I mean, I think Anderson or Indianapolis University makes perfect sense. U of I is a perfect spot for it. It's located well in the city. I mean, I would just like to see the fans be able to see more of what's going on. Because, even as much as you and I know, and everybody else who's ever been to camp for that matter, you know that people are getting bored throughout the very camp that they're sitting through. But they still enjoy it. They still come back. Heck, they'll be like, man, I am so bored today. But they'll be back 3 days later for their second or third time of the summer. And I just think that it's not critical to any success by any means. But you know what? I think the players enjoy seeing the fans around there too. I mean,
absolutely.
That's a lot of fun for them, not only while they're doing instruction, but, you know, just, I mean, there are several guys in the past. Corey Redding was one of them that sticks out to me about how he would try to come up over to the crowd and fire them up during a certain drill or something. You know, I mean, that's exciting. Yeah. I think the players enjoy it, and I know that the fans enjoy it at least for about 80% of the practice.
Yeah, well, and I think for the players, obviously, breaks up the monotony. They've been working all spring. They're going to go into the season where their practices are closed. To have fans at practice and to have them reacting, you know, it gives them some juice. There's no doubt. It gives them some energy. I feel bad from the fan standpoint just because I think it was an opportunity for a lot of people who can't afford to go down to Lucas Oil Stadium or just can't get there for whatever reason to go and see the team up close, live, in person. You know, here's the opportunity to do that. And now those opportunities are greatly diminished this year. And it's sad, but you know, there's been a lot of factors that way, in terms of you were at camp last year and you were at camp years before, and the attendance last year took a major dip.
Yeah.
You know, it was noticeably smaller. And you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of it, the team was coming off of a less successful season, and some of it, you know, as early as some of the schools are going back. I know when
that's true.
They first came back to training camp, there was like a week and a half, you know, where kids were out. And I think last year there were like 3 days and schools started going back. So there's a lot of different factors that play into it. But I think ultimately it is sad because I think of, you know, there's a lot of kids out there, a lot of families out there that this is their chance. This is how they get up close and personal with the team. And now, you know, maybe that's going to be a much lower percentage chance for them to do that this year.
Yeah. So we'll be interested to see kind of how that progresses over the next few years. I think that they will, if nothing else, I think they're going to offer at least more fan days. I mean, I think two is about as bottom barrel as you can get. Yeah. So,
yeah,
I'll be interested.
I think they're going to try to find some ways to open up some more practices. And I will say this. I think the two that are open are going to be interesting as a result of this. I mean, normally the open house, quote unquote, at Lucas Oil Stadium happens during mini camp, and you know, not that it being the first practice of training camp, there aren't going to be pads or anything, so it's not going to be that much more intense than it would have been during mini camp. But it is at a later point in the year, a little more important point in the preseason. I think that'll be fun. It's always kind of a fun day anyway because it's the first time they've been in the stadium for the rookies, for the new guys to come into the team. You know, it's kind of neat. And then I really think the night practice at Warren Central could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Just because the night practices are always interesting, and that's going to be a really interesting environment for that kind of situation.
Yeah, you can be sure that just about every student that has any care in the world about football or the Colts or just in general, probably, regardless whether they care about sports or not, they're going to want to be able to be in attendance for that. That's a pretty cool thing for a school to host.
Yeah, and I think that'll be a really neat situation. So I would expect at the very least that they might move around some of the schools that are doing that. But you know what I would like to see, and this is completely taking the conversation in a totally different direction, I would like to see more preseason games at neutral sites. You know, back in the day when the Colts would play the Bears, say at Purdue, you know, or something like that, I think it would be more fun to kind of take at least one of the preseason home games and put it at a neutral site and let, you know, some fans maybe get to an area they wouldn't normally get to see an NFL game.
Mm-hmm. And kind of keep it similar to maybe a training camp environment.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be cool.
You know, and I think, and there have been like some suggestions out there by people, nobody within the league office, nothing imminent, but there have been suggestions of, hey, if you want to shorten the preseason, how about making three games? Every team gets one home game. Every team plays one neutral game. And, you know, you cut down a week from the preseason and you add some more interesting kind of aspects. Who knows, you know, how any of that's going to go. But
yeah,
I just think any time the NFL can do something to kind of put their product somewhere where it's not always available as a live event, it can only be good for the sport and for the league.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Well, let's kind of switch gears. George, it's been a while since we've really had anything of note pop up. I mean, there's some articles out, you know, about people with their preseason power rankings and all that stuff already. But, I mean, I don't really find those that interesting. I did, however, just for the simple sake of the fact that the Pro Football Talk ranked the Colts 26th. I think that's a little low. What are your thoughts on that?
I was surprised to see that. I mean, obviously, it's not college football, so there's no impact on anything, you know, from these polls. But I was really surprised to see them that low. I think somewhere between 15 and 20 is probably where I would put them on a preseason thing. But to see them that low with at least as far as we know, most of the season they're going to have a healthy Andrew Luck. It's hard for me to imagine, you know, 26 in a league. You're thinking 4-12, you know, 3-13 kind of level of play, and I just don't see that from this team. I think this is, you know, maybe at worst a 7-9 team, maybe at best a 10-6 team right now. I don't think any of those numbers get you anywhere near 26th overall in the league.
Right. No, I don't either. It just doesn't make any sense. And not only that, but I mean, and then keeping that same line of, you know, not so nice rankings, I guess. Nate Davis of USA Today ranked the Colts defensive line 32nd in the league.
That to me was really surprising, because I thought when you look at last year, it's almost a blessing in disguise kind of a situation, because you had so many injuries and you had a lot of guys who were kind of forced into action or who got more snaps than they might have gotten otherwise. You got guys like T.Y. McGill in particular and Hassan Ridgeway who got a lot of experience. And now you're dealing with defensive line, but depending on how you define defensive line for this group, you know, you've got definitely the addition of Jonathan Hankins. You've got a healthier, better mindset for Henry Anderson. And really, when you look at some of the numbers, you know, some of the more analytical numbers like PFF, he probably had a better year last year than a lot of people give him credit for.
Yeah.
He had more impact. Than necessarily, and that was while he was coming back, while he was maybe 70% at best. You know, who knows what they'll get from Kendall Langford this year, but you would think it's going to be more than last year. And then you throw in, you know, Al Woods, some of these other additions. And then if you consider Jabal Sheard and John Simon to be defensive linemen for the time that their hands are in the ground, to me it's a greatly improved defensive line over where it was a year ago. And last year, given what they had to work with, the defensive line, to me, was one of the parts of the defense that I guess they didn't overachieve, but they probably accomplished some things at times more than you would have expected them to do, just because guys like Hassan Ridgeway and T.Y. McGill were making plays who at the beginning of the year, you may not have been sure what you were going to get from them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when it comes down to it, as much as I honestly like T.Y. McGill, I thought, you know, I don't know much about Grover Stewart, but I like Hassan Ridgeway. Obviously, we like Henry Anderson. We want him to return to his rookie year's form. But when you look at any of the guys that the Colts had on their defensive line last year at all, any of them, Jonathan Hankins is far and away the best defensive lineman at any of those positions. I mean, I would almost venture out to say that he might be even possibly the best five tech if they put him out there. He was so active
probably
from the three tech and such a clean fill-in at nose tackle for Snacks Harrison. It was just not even – I mean, I did a YouTube video for just basically getting all of his snaps in and stuff like that. I put it up. It's like 10 and a half minutes long, and that was quite an editing process, let me tell you. And, I mean, it just, there wasn't anybody on the Colts defensive line last year that I watched that was even remotely close to being able to do what Jonathan Hankins could do at multiple positions. We've talked about this, George, and I've talked about it with other people too. And it's a question, you know, where does Jonathan Hankins line up? I am to the point now where I don't care where he lines up. As long as he's on the field, we're good.
Wherever he wants to, right?
I mean,
kind of the answer now.
Yep.
And it's, to me, that's the great benefit of this line this year. I mean, last year, there were guys who were stuck in places because they're either kind of the answer by default, or they were literally the only healthy guy out there who could play that spot. And this year, I feel like there's a lot more versatility. There's a lot of chances to rotate guys around, move guys around. Like I said, for what we saw during the spring, and granted, Kendall Langford didn't work at all. Hassan Ridgeway didn't really work. Guys coming back from some injury and weren't in the mix. But what we saw in the spring, he had Henry Anderson and Jonathan Hankins out there most of the time with Al Woods at the nose tackle spot. But who was playing on which side of Al Woods would change from snap to snap. And I think they've got a lot of ability to do that this year, to kind of match up to what they want to do against each individual week's opponent. And they never had anywhere close that kind of flexibility last season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't even resemble the same squad. And it just the simple fact that he basically says, nah, they're the dead last. That, to me, that doesn't compute. No. I mean, if you want to put them, like you said, somewhere in the mid-range, 15 to 20, that's acceptable because we just don't know how a lot of stuff's going to gel. But if you're going on pure talent and ability, come on. I mean, get real. They weren't the 32nd ranked defensive line last year. They were darn close, really darn close.
they were down in the bottom.
They were like 31st and a half, but they weren't quite 32. You know what I mean? There's just no sense in ranking them at 32 this year. And this kind of goes in line with, you know, there's a lot of questions about the pass rush, a lot of questions about coverage this year in the secondary, on the back end. What we don't know how a lot of that's going to turn out just on raw ability from them. I mean, look, if the camp practices, the training, all that stuff that you see them go through in secondary drills and pass rush drills, we're going to see raw ability. We're going to see all that. Mm-hmm. We don't know how that will actually mesh with competition, with an actual wide receiver or an actual offensive tackle and all that stuff right now. But when you look at all of the stuff included, when you look at the run-stopping ability that this team has improved upon, I mean, Jabal Sheard is a heck of a run stopper. John Simon can do anything, I think. I'm not saying he's like the best guy in the league or anything, but I'm saying he is very multifaceted, can do both. And you've got Jonathan Hankins, who is a humongous help against the run. Not only that, but then you look at the possibilities of the other guys on the defensive line, what they can add to the group and so on. This is a unit now, as opposed to kind of just people standing out here, 11 guys on the field, because you didn't have any group, whether it was the pass rush, the run stopping ability, the coverage, or the, you know, any of that stuff. None of that worked in tandem with anything. They were all separate entities last year. This year, we actually have some meshing from the first, second to third levels of the defense. And I just can't, for the life of me, I mean, I understand that we maybe look at people and think, you guys are a little too hype about this defense, it's a brand new group, blah, 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 but you also can't look completely at the other end of the spectrum and just say they're terrible just because of how they were last year. It's not the same team.
I would be significantly surprised if this defense has not improved this season. Now, to what extent, we can argue, you know, how far up they go, but I don't think this is a 30th ranked defense in the league anymore. And like you said, I think there's so many pieces that there's just so much more they can do from a design standpoint now because of the guys that they brought in. And yeah, you know, how's that all ultimately going to play out? I don't know. But it's going to be a much clearer view of what Ted Monachino can do as a defense coordinator. I think, you know, a year ago he was very, very hamstrung as far as what kind of coverages he could even call, you know. And I know that there were times that he made poor decisions even within his limited options, but, you know, let's be honest, week one against Detroit, that secondary, you know, there were guys who came in on Tuesday who were starting and playing a large portion of that game that week. And that's not obviously an ideal spot to be. And really all year long, the defense, even when it was healthy, there were deficiencies, but it seemed like there was always somebody out or somebody suspended, somebody missing that was a key contributor. And this year, I think they're better prepared to lose a guy like that. You know, not that they're a top five defense or anything crazy like that,
right?
But they've got better depth, and they can fill in, they can change what they're doing a little bit more and react to a loss of a player. Whereas last year it was almost like, there's two starters down and now the defense is not able to function.
Right. And I can't remember exactly how many. I did do a sheet for like air yards last year towards the end or throughout the season to kind of determine what quarterbacks were throwing the ball downfield a little further. And I don't remember the exact number, but I remember breaking down this first week's game with Luck and Stafford. And I think, all the defense for the Colts was terrible. He didn't have to throw downfield. He had I'm pretty certain it was under 100 air yards for the entire game. And I think he had 27 to 30 attempts, maybe more than that even. I'm probably way off. But there was no downfield passing whatsoever. The Colts just could not tackle anything that night. And that was what cost them the game. And, we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago as well. I watched a little bit more of that game and the Jacksonville game. And there are literally two or three plays in those games, just a couple of them. If they get made, the Colts win 10 games last year.
Yeah, well, and, the game at Houston. During the comeback.
Yep, there's another one.
And, during that situation. So, but, we were talking about this with somebody else earlier today, and I thought one of those interesting things about that, though, is that they could have been an 11-5 team, but all those weaknesses would still have been there. And I think it's almost better that they didn't, because it did force them to kind of – because if they were 11-5 and they'd gone back to the playoffs, the narrative this offseason would have been significantly different. And I don't think – I don't know that you would have seen the kind of overhaul that this team has undergone, and I think it was necessary. That defense had become very old and very unathletic, and I can't think of two worse things to be in the National Football League.
Yeah, you're exactly right, George. I mean, if they did go 11, you are 100. I don't even need to expound on it. You are 100% right. That is exactly the case. They would not be in the position they are right now. Chris Ballard would not be in Indianapolis. And the Colts would still have, and not to drop bombs on, but a bunch of scrubs around here, more than likely. They may have gone heavy into free agency, but there'd be a lot more 30-year-olds than just a couple guys, And you couldn't have said it more perfect. And I think that was a biggest, probably godsend, if you want to call it that, to happen to the Colts last year, to actually end up 8-8, and maybe another loss wouldn't even have hurt. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just to put it in the if they win 7 games, and I'm not trying to root for anything, and certainly not for anybody to lose their jobs, but if the Colts win 7 games last year, maybe Chuck's not the head coach right now either. I mean, just for possibility's sake.
Yeah, you never know. Right. The last 2 years, really, if they don't win the week 17 game, who knows what changes the following Monday. And I just know that there's a lot of things, there's a whole different atmosphere down there right now. Mm-hmm. We talked about it before. It's just a completely different environment, and that's because Chris Ballard has come in and he's made it clear, guys are gonna have to earn their spots. They're going to have to compete. No one's gonna be handed a job. No one's gonna be you were drafted here, so you're getting this spot. None of that's happening. And I think the players embrace that. I think that's the kind of atmosphere they want. They want to be in a situation where they feel like they need to fight every day, because you don't get to this level without having that kind of competitive nature, having that kind of ego, wanting to measure yourself against the other man. And you just kind of feel the whole excitement from the team of, hey, this is going to be real. And now you add in probably the one talking point that has changed this summer. I know we were talking about that off the air a little bit. Maybe the one thing that has changed is Chris Ballard basically coming out and saying, confirming, in an interview with the website, it's going to be a physical camp. There's going to be hitting. And I think there's a lot of people, fans, media, probably coaches, a lot of people who have witnessed training camp the last few years who think that's a welcome change, something that this team needs.
Mm-hmm. totally agree. I'm one of those. I want to see it. I know you do. And I, you know, I don't know that I've heard anybody say that they thought it was a bad idea. As many times as people would think, you know, there's always somebody, you know, whether it's at work, you're talking to someone and say, oh, they, you know, they need to hit. Oh, you don't want to hit. You'll get injured or something. I don't know that I've heard anybody say that. Not even the guy at work, you know, that doesn't really know much about the Colts, but, you know, he tells everybody how much he knows. You know what I'm saying? That guy. I haven't even heard him say that. And there's a couple where I work. Yeah. So, you know, I like to listen to those. They're always fun to chuckle at when I'm sitting there at work when I first get in to kind of listen to what those guys have to say. But it's such a need for this team. Like we've talked about in the past, injuries happen. I mean, you can get injuries by doing simple drills, backpedal drills, running routes, you know, taking five-step drops. You can do it by, you know, just a lot of the offensive line drills where you're just putting your hands up on a dummy or even at the tackling dummies, you know, or the sled or anything. Things happen like that. But this Colts team in 2017 has to be a quality tackling team. And in order for them to be ready to go week one, and if not significantly better in week two, they have to be more physical in camp. It's necessity. I mean, there's just no way around it. You can't not have that this year. And not only that, and here's something that I want to see from Pagano. Not just that this stuff takes place in camp, in the off season. I want him to embrace it. I want him to be, this is what I want. You know what I mean? Because we kind of see... I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, so I'll just say I kind of see him as, you know, he's a player's coach. People love him. I also think that he is a tag along as far as what's asked of him, that he's just going to do it without much, you know, much disdain, I guess. I don't see him keeping personal issues with how he's instructed to do things. And I think that this should be right up his alley. So, I mean, when you see Pagano in his press conferences, you don't see him animated very often. You know, sometimes you do. He'll chuckle or just, you know, whatever he's going to do. But I think this year you're going to actually see some excitement from him in his little pressers after practice and stuff like that, because I think this is really what he wants to be a part of.
Yeah, I think you're right. And he hinted, you know, throughout the spring that it might be more physical. When you hear that from Ballard, it becomes like, okay, that's what's going to happen.
Yep.
And Chuck never came out and said it the way that Ballard did, but, you know, he kept saying it might be more physical because I think, you know, he's a defensive guy. And he's also an old school guy. I mean, you think about his dad coached high school football in Colorado for decades. And, you know, he comes from that era. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I would think that he really would embrace this. And I think to an extent the players will too, because again, it's part of that competition. If you're a defensive player and you're going to earn a spot, how are you going to do that without tackling?
Yep. And as much as we talk about how the competition mantra is going to get guys fired up to play hard in camp, being physical in camp is going to weed out those guys who aren't really ready to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, are there going to be maybe more some more injuries? I thought it was interesting earlier today. I was listening to NFL radio, and I heard Doug Peterson on there. Mm-hmm. And he had come over from Kansas City as well, you know, last year.
Yep.
To take over the head job in Philadelphia. And he had a really physical camp. And I think some people were kind of caught off guard by it. And there were quite a few injuries during that training camp. But they were talking to him now. I said, hey, it's your second year. You're going to back off a little bit. You know, what's your plan? And he basically said, look, injuries are part of the game. It's something you're going to have to deal with. We don't want them. We're going to do everything we can, you know, to be as cautious as we can, to protect as many players as we can. But at the same time, this is how you have to become a good, tough, physical football team. This is where that happens. And so, no, I'm not going to back off. And I thought that's basically the message that's being sent here is, look, if you're going to preach being a good tackling team, you're going to preach being a tough team, which has happened the last few years here, you're going to have to go out and build that in the summer at training camp. That doesn't mean it's going to happen every day.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's going to happen, you know, for every minute of every practice when it does happen. But there are going to have to be live periods, and there are going to have to be chances for players to separate themselves especially with how young this team is. You know, so many guys who are either just coming into the league or who are accepting roles that are going to be expanded, different, you know, more, just more than what they've done before. They need to be able to go out and tackle. And I think the offense too, you know, I mean, a guy like Marlon Mack, we've talked before about pass pro. Live hitting is going to help him in that regard tremendously.
Yep. Absolutely. Half speed's not going to help him a bit in any aspect whatsoever. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't want these guys taking, you know, de-cleating each other, but at the same time, you know, two-hand touch, give me a little more than that, you know, even in the walkthrough stuff, give me a little shove or something, you know, just something, because these guys need to actually have a reason to change their angle. They need a reason to cut hard. They need a reason to follow their alignment. You know, I mean, stuff like that. These guys, a lot of these young guys especially, are really going to have to understand that everything that they do has to be deliberate. It has to be a physical part of their daily routine. But they also have to understand that they are being brought in to play football, not to follow a specific script of what their title is or how they are supposed to react in each game. These guys were brought in because they were good football players. That's something that we continually hear from Pagano, from Ballard, from all these guys. You know, what do you know about him? I know he's a hell of a football player. It seems like I hear that 100 different times. That's what they want from them. They don't want everything they're doing to be scripted. Here's what you need to do. This is what this is going to look like. Try to get into these, you know, that type of stuff. But they want these guys ultimately just to be football players and to go out and make plays.
Absolutely. And, you know, and with that in mind, a guy like Frank Gore probably doesn't need a whole lot of work in these situations. We know what he can do. He's been doing it in the league. I can see resting him and keeping him out of some of that. But a guy like Marlon Mack definitely needs it. Some other guys fighting for positions, you know, fighting in battles, they definitely need it. And I'll tell you, and you saw this firsthand, look at a guy like Daron Carter. You know, in training camp practices, he looked like a world beater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here was a guy that had Pro Bowl written all over him. But the second they got into the preseason games and the action went live, he disappeared.
Yep.
And, you know, I think more live periods, and again, it's not going to be the whole camp. It's not going to be every day of every camp. But I think more live periods are going to help to kind of show that before maybe you get into a preseason game.
Yeah, I was really excited about Daron Carter, too.
And you weren't alone.
I thought that guy was going to be a hell of a running back, man.
He had the shot, you know, but you see things and it changes, you know, and there's a list of my line. We can call out one guy or another, but there's a long, long list of guys who in shorts look like all pros. And as soon as the game went live, it changes, you know, and that's the players will tell you that, the coaches will tell you that all the time. That's where the separation happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's not going to happen to 100%, but I think I see a lot more good happening than bad. And that's not to say that, you know, the first time an injury happens, especially if it's somebody who's a bigger name or somebody, you know, who's of importance to this team, that there isn't going to suddenly be a lot of second guessing about it. But I'm going to say just going in, you know, that's the risk you take. But I think right now with this team and this season and all the new pieces, I think it's a risk worth taking.
Yep. And you know what? I just realized you said Daron Carter, and I was thinking DeLon Carter.
Oh, well, him too.
Yeah. It was very similar. Yeah, very similar comparisons there. Looked great in training camp. You thought, this dude's going to be a great running back. But, yeah, Daron Carter, man, just nothing. Nothing. I spent that entire offseason, you know, basically not just talking him up, but looking into him, trying to find out, is this guy just all nothing? I mean, is there just nothing to this guy? Because everybody's talk about once he does this, you know, he's done. This and that and the other. I mean, a lot of people were saying, I was one guy backing him up and saying, no, you know what? I mean, you look at him. He's running quality routes. He's got good hands. He's doing what he needs to do. He's practicing hard and everything, man. I just don't see how a guy like this can turn down. Man, he looked like crap. He didn't even look good right now in the CFL. I mean, is he's a practice guy? I mean, that's what he is. He's not a gamer.
And it was funny because I think a lot of people kind of got on Pep Hamilton because they were, you know, he had that comment about, well, he makes a play every day out here. He did.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't hyperbole at the time. Anybody who was watching those practices and who were out there, De'Ron Carter was making plays every day, you know, and he was going over the middle and he was a huge guy with a lot of athleticism. And there was a lot of excitement and a lot of reason to believe, hey, maybe there's something here. But it didn't happen. And he's not alone. I think there was a guy a few years before him named Chris Adams, who I can recall, who was another big receiver, you know, who at training camp was really getting things done. And, you know, I'm not calling out players here individually because I know I couldn't even look that good in shorts. So,
right.
It's not that. It's just when your job is talent evaluation, and you're taking away such a hugely important part of the game, it's tough to really get those decisions right and to really know what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been kind of Chris Ballard's point. You know, he used the boxing analogy, which I thought was really good. You know, boxers spar. They don't go between fights just shadow boxing. You know, they go out and they spar and they get hit and they react to that. And you, in a physical sport, that's what you have to do. You know,
yeah.
It would be like a NASCAR driver just using a video game all off season, you know, not testing at tracks. You just can't do that. You don't get the physical activity in there. I just think it hurts every aspect of it, the evaluation, the players themselves. You know, you're just making it a harder job than it needs to be.
I absolutely agree. 100%. So this is pretty fair to say that a lot of us agree with that. Now, kind of an offshoot of this conversation is, you know, a lot of people, because of the Colts injuries in the past, have brought up their training staff. You know, I don't know any of them personally. So, I mean, I'm not assuming or anything like that. But with all that injury and stuff like that, do you make anything of that? I mean, is there any reason to believe that the training staff would be less than good because people are getting injured?
You know, you never know because there's a bunch of, like, you know, what's going on here moments there, and you don't have a whole lot of information. What I think is funny is last year they changed all of that. You know, they had a new strength and conditioning guy. They changed the way that they were even preparing, you know, and they've done it again this year. You'll see early on in practice, the beginning of practice is a little bit different. What they do right after stretches is a little bit different. You know, every strength coach, every conditioning coach has a different idea of how they want to handle that. And it's not a massive thing, but you'll see it pretty quickly. There's a little bit different drill kind of right after stretching, and stretching itself looks a little bit different than it did. So I don't know, you know, they went and they made some massive changes last year and he still had the injuries. So
they're
an unavoidable part of the game, truth be told. And I know every team, I think, feels like, I know the numbers bear out that the Colts have been more injured than some other teams, but I think every fan base feels like their team has too many injuries. You know, it's a part of the nature of the game. The question is, you know, can the hitting in some way actually help that? There's a theory out there that says, hey, you go and you get yourself ready, you survive training camp. The guys that do make it through may be healthier during the season as a result of that. We'll see.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. I like I said, I don't know really. I could never make really heads or tails of that type of a situation. I see a lot of people complaining about it, but it's like, I just don't know. I mean, you can only nurse a guy back to health however his body wants to heal, you know, so it's kind of an odd situation with all of that. But I am excited to see these guys and see them, you know, kind of knock each other around a little bit.
Well, especially as this defense, you know, we hear all the time, this defense needs an identity. This defense really needs an identity. It's a group of guys who have never really played together. I mean, you might have four, maybe, as the most optimistic returning starters on this team. You know, there's 20. I saw a stat the other day. There's 22 new defensive players on this roster.
Yeah.
22 guys who weren't here last year. They need an identity because they don't have one, and I don't think you can build that without some physicality.
Yeah, I agree. Let's switch gears kind of here for our final topic of the day. What is there a position coach that you think will grow by leaps and bounds their unit, like whether it be Ted Monachino, whether it be, you know, the offensive line there with Philbin or Sanjay Lau, a lot of people talking about him, you know, loving him for the wide receiver group. Which group do you think would see the most significant change due to their coach having a little more chemistry and in a second or third year with them?
Yeah, I really think it's going to be Sanjay Lau, just from everything that we've heard. And you see it continuing. I mean, I don't know if you're paying attention to some of the Instagrams and things that are coming out, but the receivers are working their butts off right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And they've been out there and they've been vocal about it. And I think they all, it's not just that they like this guy or that they believe it. You know, they've all bought in to whatever it is he's selling 100%. And I think that's going to change. And you see it in places he came from. I mean, their receivers last year in Buffalo, you know, Sammy Watkins in particular, but I think even Robert Woods said something about it, you know, on his way out to the Rams. They miss him. They think that's going to be a big loss to the Bills' core. And I just don't see how it can do anything but good things for this group. And you imagine a guy like T.Y. Hilton, who has already reached some pretty impressive plateaus, if he can get even better, you know, what can that mean?
Right.
If a guy, you know, if Sanjay Lau can unlock, and that's part of it, too, is what, you know, look, Brian Schottenheimer could be the best quarterback's coach in the history of mankind, but how much more room is there for Andrew Luck to go up?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that receiving group, especially behind T.Y. Hilton, there's a lot of unlocked potential in there, a lot of untapped. We talked about Philip Dorsett the last time I was on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what, how his physical skills have not translated to the field. You know, if Sanjay Lau can get something to click, guys like Kamar Aiken, guys like Dante Moncrief, guys like Philip Dorsett, we've seen flashes from all of them. If he can get something to click and be, you know, the consistent, productive receivers that they can be, I just think there's so much potential there. And when you hear that they're all bought in, they're all 100% behind him, it's tough to imagine that that's not going to be the group that you see the most growth with.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, who was it? Somebody on NFL.com had the Colts ranked as like the 16th. Oh, I think it was Nate Burleson. He put their tandem, the wide receiver tandems, as the 16th in the league. I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, just because of the unknown pieces about it.
Mm-hmm.
But like you say, man, the potential is through the roof, you know. And then what a couple days earlier in that, one of the around the NFL writers basically wrote that he thought they were one of the most underrated groups in the league.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to believe anything about this group, whether it's great or bad, until we see something on the field with these guys. But you're right. Chester Rogers has like done a social media campaign since the season ended last year. And man, you know what? He might be the one guy that I fell in love with right away when I saw him that actually is going to do well. You know,
yeah.
We've had a couple in the past. Like, I wasn't super high on LaVon Brazil, but I was really impressed with him. Thought he could actually really turn into be something decent. You know, Derrick Rogers. I mean, we've had some really talented wide receivers come through that were either drafted mid to late rounds or undrafted. And I think that we are really seeing Chester Rogers is going to rise as a number two, number three type guy in the league over the next couple of years. You cannot mistake his work ethic. I mean, at all. Not to mention his skill, his ability to break out and make plays after the catch. We've talked about him a little bit, but I'm still so excited for this guy.
He reminds me a lot of Jack Doyle in the sense of his attention to his assignment and his ability to be where he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Now, athletically, he's far superior to Jack Doyle. You know, the things that he can do physically, they're not really comparable. But I think that that's going to carry him a long ways, too. You know, the fact that because that ultimately, when you look at, you know, why did Andrew Luck look for Jack Doyle so much in the red zone? Why did he look for him so much on third down? It's that trust.
Yep.
It's that, you know, the fact that Andrew Luck felt like, I know 84 is going to be where he's supposed to be.
Yep.
And I think that's starting to grow with Chester Rogers, you know, and that's hugely important. Obviously, not just the quarterback, but the coaching staff, you know, the guy who you can count on. It's how Griff Whalen played in the league as long as he did. Mm-hmm. You know, go yep. and be where you're supposed to be. And I think when you combine that with Chester's work ethic, which is natural talent, there's a lot of reason to be excited about him. But I also think what's great about that, not just for him, but everybody around him, is the competition there's going to be in that room. We've talked about it all spring long. Every time I think I've been on, we've mentioned it. Because it's so exciting, and it's something that you want to talk about. That competition amongst the receivers group should be outstanding all preseason long.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm excited for it. I think they've got a little too many of them in camp, but I'm excited to see, you know, the top five or six. You know, I was talking to Kevin Bowen the other day, and I've just always kind of put corners and wide receivers always carrying six. The Colts always carrying six on their roster. He said that he thought that with Chester Rogers in the return game, that he thought the Colts could afford to just carry five.
Yeah, there's going to be some interesting roster mechanics, too, as we get down, you know, into the cuts. Now, we talked about this before, too, and a big factor in this is one cut this year. You know, not two. So they're going to go into week four of the preseason with 90 guys. And there's going to be some interesting mechanics there just in terms of, do you keep maybe an extra running back instead of an extra receiver? Do you keep, you know, an extra defensive lineman because there are so many versatile guys? Like there's going to be a lot of decisions to be made. And I still think when you see how active Chris Ballard's been, how much he loves the scouting aspect of his job, I think there's little doubt they're going to be active on the waiver wire after cuts. I think there's at least – I'm not going to sit there and say there's at least one starter who's not on this roster, although I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. But I think there's at least one guy who's going to make an impact for the Colts in 2017 who isn't here yet.
Yeah, that's what's fun. That's what's fun to think about. But crazy at the same time, you know, you start scouring other teams' rosters and stuff and other teams' articles, guys writing stuff about who could be on the edge of – you know, being let go or just whatever, man. And that's what's like, okay, well, if he's let go, they got that, you know, make a move on that guy, you know, because there's going to be a few of those. Whether the Colts nail him or not, that's a different story. But there's going to be a few guys that are out there. I mean, God, what did we talk about? What, 37 guys are going to be, is that right? 90-53 is 37? Yeah, 37 guys are going to be released per team. All in one day. I mean, well, upcoming, yep. You know, by the end of a certain day, they're all going to be gone. I mean, 32 times 37, that's a crap load of people out on the waiver wire right there. So you can imagine that if the waiver wire was an actual real thing that somebody had to control, can you imagine that guy's job? He's like, I need an assistant or five.
Yeah. I'm cutting a few other guys. But, you know, there's been a history there. T.Y. McGill was a pickup at that time of year for this team. Jack Doyle came at that time of year.
Yeah, Tennessee, you know, let him go.
Those are two of the better moves probably that Ryan Grigson made, you know, bring those guys in at that time of year. And, you know, Matthias Farvey is starting to show something. If nothing else, he's a key special teams contributor. He came after Arizona let him go.
Yeah,
I think that there's always a way. You know, and I would keep my eyes specifically on inside linebackers and tight ends because it seems like they keep bringing guys in as tryouts there. And I'm not saying they don't trust the guys they have, but you can tell that I think they're open to adding depth at those two spots. And I think if there's a guy that pops out that they like in either one of those two spots, then I don't think they'll hesitate to go and bring him on board.
Absolutely, unquestionably. George, thanks for jumping on here again, man. We've got a couple announcements, though, before we kind of wrap it up. You're starting a little venture of your own in the podcast world. You want to tell everybody about that?
Yeah, not sure yet when it's going to drop, but we have already done the first episode. It's going to be called Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. I'm not 100% sure where it's going to appear, but it's something to keep an eye out for, and I can tell you that I will put the link out as soon as I can, you know, as soon as I know at my Twitter account at GM Bremer. And it's something I'm really excited about. I mean, I always have fun coming on with you, and I'm going to continue to do that. But it's fun, you know, as well as anyone from doing it. It's fun to fun way to kind of engage the fans and the audience. This can be a really interactive medium, and that's one thing that I really want to do, get a lot of questions, get a lot of a chance for fans to be a part of it. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to happen all season long, and hopefully we'll be able to get some players on from time to time. And it should be a really fun format and something that hopefully listeners will really enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you'll have better luck with players than I will. Hopefully, I'm really, really hoping to get to nab a few of them at camp, because that's about my best opportunity to do that. As you well know, for the most part, Colts aren't real open to allowing players to talk to the media outside of, you know, an actual press conference or whatever. So,
yeah,
that's a little difficult for me, but I'm trying. I'll get denied, you know, 20 times, but don't mistake that I'm not trying. I'm not sending in my request.
Keep knocking on the door.
Yeah, right. Somebody's got to answer sooner or later. But I've also got a little bit of an announcement. Kind of been teasing this to you guys over the past week or so, but I will be starting up a new podcast for Stampede Blue. It'll be called the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, and we'll be doing that. We haven't gotten all of the stuff ironed out yet, but I'm excited to drop that. That we'll be doing that for Stampede Blue. That'll be something we're doing multiple times a week there as well, and I'm really excited about that. I hope that you guys will follow me over there and listen to that, and catch me on Stampede Blue Colts Cast. So I'm excited to start that up. That'll be another fun little adventure as I've taken on a little bit larger of a role at Stampede Blue, helping out our guy Brett Mock, and you know, bringing in some more contributors and stuff to make that site as good as it can be. So hope you guys will follow me over there. I'll be obviously tweeting out the links as well to get you guys a little more acclimated to that. And we'll go from there. But George, thank you for joining me again today. Always a blast to lean back and shoot it with you. So thanks for coming on, man, and good luck with your podcasting adventure on your own.
No problem. Thanks a lot. And like I said, I'm going to stay a regular guest as long as you have me. So the no changes there. It'll just be if the people want to put up with me, they'll have a little bit longer each week to do that.
Yep, absolutely. You guys hear that? George is following me. You guys have to, too. So we're gonna keep doing that. So thank you guys all for joining me. I'll talk to you next week right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.